Hello and welcome to the 50th edition of Critical Q&A, the show where I answer your questions based on what you've left for me in the comments section of my Critical Q&A videos or have sent to me by email at askchrisshelton@gmail.com. With this being the 50th episode now, I thought I should do something special for it. So what I'm doing is an extended length Q&A episode with some extended length questions. Some people have asked me some pretty long questions, and I have, you know, I do editing and whatnot on them, but sometimes they're just long questions and I haven't gotten to them yet, so I'm going to do that now. Some of these are some older questions that I've also been waiting to get to, so let's just kind of get to it and see how this goes. Here we go. Dimitri Milowicz. Chris, I just watched this documentary, The Beginner's Guide to L. Ron Hubbard, expecting Hardeep Singh Kohli, the presenter, to be critical of Scientology. I was left with a different impression of Dianetics. Watching this very intelligent and articulate man on a two-week journey through to his first auditing session, everything the Scientologists did seemed to make sense to me. I have been left a little confused as to how I now view Dianetics, because it all seemed to be so simple, clear, and concise. My question to you is, do you still practice Scientology outside of the organized church? Are you critical of the tech of Scientology in general, or the organization as headed by David Miscavige? It has disturbed me a little because I have been so critical of Scientology up to now, but now have a new openness to the fundamentals behind Scientology. The mind control you speak so critically of, is that referring to the Church of Scientology or L. Ron Hubbard's teachings in part or as a whole? And 1-8. So there's a reformed Church of Scientology, right? Have you done any videos on former Miscavige Scientologists who are now practicing a reformed type of Scientology? I've always questioned whether the dark side of Hubbard can be removed from the religion and leave a new type of healthy Scientology. Are reformed Scientologists brainwashed? All right, well, I'm not going to use labels like brainwashed or indoctrinated or, you know, whatever, you know, some derogatory term for people who come out of Scientology and are still practicing it in some form or another outside of the church. That's called independent Scientology, not reformed Scientology. I've never heard of anybody formally call it reformed Scientology, so let's clear that up. And as far as independent Scientologists go, you know, everybody has a right to do whatever they want to with their lives. My opinion, since I'm being asked about this, is that it is an utter and complete waste of time. But people are free to do whatever they want to, just as they're free to go engage in homeopathy or crystal healing or, you know, sticking magnets over their bodies or something in order to balance out their, you know, magnetic waves or this sort of thing. All of it is just woo. It's pseudoscientific nonsense. And I don't put any stock in any of that because it hasn't, from any everything I've ever seen, it doesn't have any proof of being any more efficacious or beneficial to somebody than a placebo or sugar pills and that sort of thing. And that applies, as far as I'm concerned, to independent Scientology, right? Scientology techniques and practices have mental manipulation and I guess you could say mind control techniques built into them. There are psychologically and emotionally damaging things that go on when you practice intensive Scientology. You know, doing some of the training routines or the communication drills or even some of the auditing procedures for short periods of time, you know, is really no big, and that's not going to like damage you permanently or something like that. You want to go have a Dianetics session or, you know, do some regression therapy with Dianetics or some light hypnosis or something with it, go right ahead. I mean, I'm, you know, who am I to stop you, right? But don't pretend that you're on the road to a new state of spiritual and mental awareness and ability, because you're not. Those things don't exist. You know, there are no real operating thetans. There is no clear, as Hubbard describes it in Dianetics, the Modern Science of Mental Health, or in any other issue he wrote later on. You know, this idea of a being who no longer has his own reactive mind. What is that even supposed to mean? It's wholly subjective, right? And up to the individual to decide whether he's achieved that state or not. And you know, as far as that, as that state is described in Dianetics, it's, there's, you know, there's much more formal, you know, abilities and signs that a person has achieved to this state of clear. For example, eidetic recall, right? In full, you know, full three dimensions, you know, everything that's ever happened to the person. I haven't met one person that achieved that. Or, you know, free from all psychosomatic illnesses. In other words, they don't get sick, ever. Yeah, okay, I have yet to meet a person who has achieved that, right? So this idea, you know, and there's a whole list of these things. So I say all that because I want to make it clear that if you're doing Scientology outside of the church and you expect to achieve those results, you're never going to. If you're doing Scientology or anything, or Scientology outside of the Church of Scientology because you want to feel better, well, that's easy. There's lots of things that do that. And that is pretty much what I've seen people doing with independent Scientology. Is they use it to feel better, you know, and they cherry pick. They pick and choose the parts of Scientology that they want and don't want. And so they tend to reject the more authoritarian and organizational aspects of it, right? Like the, you know, the heavy ethics and, you know, that sort of thing. Or they'll use it in a lighter, fluffier way, you know, like security checking. It feels good, or confessionals, right? Security checks is when somebody puts you on the e-meter and asks you questions and you confess your sins. And, you know, there is a certain degree of good feeling that comes from, you know, taking responsibility for bad things that you've done and confessing those you know, and feeling like you got something off your chest finally, you know, that you weren't willing to tell anybody. Sure, that, of course that feels great, you know, but don't pretend that you're going to be, you know, able to pop out of your body as a spiritual being anytime you want as a result of doing that, because that's just not very realistic. When you get organized Scientology going, and let's go to this documentary and this original question from Dimitri here. I took a look at this Beginner's Guide to L. Ron Hubbard thing, and this was a guy who put this film together where he went to an independent Scientology group and got through some introductory services that are pretty standard introductory services for anybody getting involved in Scientology. And you know, I've talked about this at length before, and in answering this question, I'll mention again that the beginning services of Scientology are the good stuff. They're the things that are based on common sense principles, tend to make a person feel pretty good, pretty fast, or give him information or skills, like through drilling or through practice, that he didn't have before. In an area that is intensely practical, like communication or family relationships or dealing with his children or things like this, very, very practical skills, right? It has nothing to do with the eidetic recall and advanced spiritual states and, you know, Xenu and all that crap. All that stuff is way later. So at the beginning of Scientology, you get these introductory things, and those are very workable. So it's no surprise that you would look at those things or look at somebody receiving those things and think, oh, well, that makes sense. That's workable. That, oh, well, gee, maybe Dianetics isn't so bad after all. And there is where you make the huge mistake that everybody makes when they go into Dianetics and Scientology or any destructive cult group, which is they assume. They start making assumptions about things. Well, if this works and this works, then maybe it all works, right? It's just this automatic train of thought, and it's totally wrong. It's completely unfounded logic, and it's jumping to conclusions that you shouldn't be jumping to. So, that point being made, you know, I didn't watch that entire documentary. I watched enough of it to kind of get the gist of what was going on, and once I saw that the guy was involved with an independent Scientology group, well, here's the other aspect to that. Anything goes. I can't speak intelligently about one independent Scientology group versus another independent Scientology group versus another, because I would accept to say that odds are all three of those groups are going to be doing very different things and calling it Scientology, because they're cherry-picking the bits and pieces out of this tremendous body of work that L. Ron Hubbard put together. They're taking the bits and pieces that they like. And that to them, that's Scientology. To somebody else, you know, who maybe has a little bit more of an authoritarian point of view, you know, they can't do Scientology without the ethics part of it, right? The ethics component. Well, the ethics component happens to be right out of 1984, if taken all the way through to its conclusion, to its logical conclusion, as Hubbard wrote it. So here you know, you might have one field group or independent group who uses that ethics, and another independent field group, Scientology independent group, who doesn't want to have anything to do with the ethics. And they'll both call themselves the real Scientology. So, you know, instantly you have splinter groups and what official Scientology calls squirrel groups, right? Because they're going off the main path, right? And Hubbard compared them to, you know, going off and you know, gathering nuts. You know, they're just useless activities. Well, I don't think they're useless activities for the same reason Hubbard did. Hubbard was trying to protect his trademarks. Hubbard was trying to protect his income, right? Because to him, Scientology was all about making money. He's not making any money from those guys. So he wanted to do everything he could to invalidate and destroy those groups as quickly as possible, and eventually writing a policy letter called Keeping Scientology Working, which specifically, you know, said that if you're not doing Scientology exactly as I say to do it, you're not doing it right at all, and you're dooming yourself and all of mankind to, you know, an eternity of hell and damnation, right? And he used very strong words for that. So Hubbard really wanted only people only doing what he said Scientology was. And what, of course, you know, from a certain point of view, all of these independent groups are doing what he said. They're just not doing all of what he said. If you do all the things he said, well, then you have, you know, official Scientology or what has been official Scientology, and that gets into a lot of authoritarian, you know, super heavy-duty control stuff. And it also gets into practices that are damaging to you. I think after you've had, you know, hundreds of hours of the auditing procedures, where you're being placed under, you know, hypnotic trances and that sort of thing, where your emotions are being manipulated and messed around with, I don't think that's good for you, you know, and I wouldn't recommend anybody do any of that. So my official stance on it is stay away from it. If it's got the word Scientology connected to it, don't go near it, because there's nothing that Scientology has to offer that you can't get somewhere else without all that rigmarole and without all that nonsense connected to it. And unless you take the time to study all of it, then you don't know going in what this group or this particular individual practitioner is or isn't going to do to you, right? And maybe he only gives you the really good stuff and he doesn't get into all the heavy-duty stuff. But how would you know until you've done it and you're involved in it and it's a little too late for you, right? Because if you, I guarantee you, you get involved in some of that more, you know, some of the deeper and manipulative stuff, it leaves scars. And it's not, those aren't the kind of things you want connected to you in your life. So my thing about Scientology is I don't really want to see it being, you know, practiced really a whole lot at all. You know, there's a lot in Scientology that Hubbard didn't invent or didn't come up with. And those things you can get elsewhere, but almost by definition, because he plagiarized it, right? And the things that, even those things, like, okay, the study technology, right? You know, look up your words. Look up words that you don't understand in a dictionary and clear them up so that you understand what you're reading. That's great. There's nothing wrong with that principle. That principle was not invented by L. Ron Hubbard. He plagiarized it and incorporated it into Scientology. But the way he incorporated it is he made it that the misunderstood word, he called it, is the most important thing in study. And it resolves everything. And the only thing wrong with any student anywhere is misunderstood words, right? And everything else that could be wrong with a student, Hubbard came up with these other ideas. But none of them, they all take a backseat to this misunderstood word. Well, that doesn't happen to be the most important thing in study, as far as I'm concerned, right? There's a lot more going on in the subject of the fields of education and study. And there are no one-size-fits-all solutions for everybody when it comes to teaching things to people, because people learn differently. So anyway, that's an example where, you know, you take this principle that sounds good and actually is good, and then Scientology and Hubbard, you know, add their little twist to it, and so then it gets a bit destructive. You know, it gets a bit not helpful. And Hubbard managed to do that with just about everything he touched that is part of the Scientology technology. You know, you take these decent principles like, you know, the communication stuff or the ARC triangle, the affinity reality communication triangle, and then he takes this decent principle which has some workability and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, and he puts it up on this pedestal where, oh, it's this thing that you must practically worship because it must work all the time, everywhere. And none of the principles of Scientology work 100% of the time, everywhere, with everybody. Right? So these extreme things that's one of the biggest problems with Scientology as a philosophy. So that's why I think that staying away from it, you avoid those pitfalls, those landmines that Hubbard laid all throughout the subject matter. Because they're everywhere. They are all through the technology. And also, you also save yourself from having to read L. Ron Hubbard, because, man, that guy, his writing leaves a lot to be desired. You know, it's very twisty and very tricky. It's very tricky. And it will get you thinking in directions that you wouldn't normally want to see yourself thinking. So, that all being said, I think that's my answer to that question, those questions. Annie A., thank you so much for your videos. I have a question about Scientology buzzwords and how they are used as a PR strategy, especially by celebrities in Scientology. The first is the word bigot. When John Sweeney was investigating Scientology, Tommy Davis kept calling him a bigot over and over again. He sounded like a broken record. When Leah Remini left Scientology, Kirstie Alley went on the Howard Stern show and said she no longer associates with Remini, not because she left, but because she's a bigot for criticizing Scientology. If there's a news report featuring an ex-Scientologist, the news broadcasters have to read parts of these long rebuttals, which almost always accuse the critic of being a bigot. It's as if they intentionally say this word over and over again to suggest that any person who looks at Scientology critically or questions its intentions is actually a bigot. And decent people should despise bigots, right? The other buzzword is religion. When I think about it, most people don't usually refer to their faith, whatever it may be, as their religion. They might say my faith or my belief system, but not necessarily my religion. Yet, Tom Cruise always speaks of Scientology by saying, my religion. Tommy Davis accused Sweeney of being a bigot by attacking his religion. Danny Masterson from That 70s Show said critics can go fuck themselves for attacking his religion just because it's new. There are countless other examples. There are other buzzwords, but I wanted to specifically ask about these two. I guess I'm just wondering if the constant use of these words as a defense mechanism is some sort of tactic or PR strategy for getting the public, especially those who don't really know or care much about Scientology, to assume that anyone who comments negatively about the Church of Scientology is a bigot who also hates religion. If you have any insight, I'd love to hear it. Thanks. Yeah, Annie, that's exactly what's going on. You know, Scientology is far from the only group that uses PR buzzwords. You hear it out of politicians' mouths all the time. And here you've nailed two places where Scientology uses these buzzwords very heavily, right? They are very definitely trying to morph and mold public opinion about critics of Scientology by definitely, positively, and repeatedly positioning them as bigots. And bigots are bad. I don't think there is anybody who would say, yes, I want to be a bigot, or yes, bigotry is a good thing. It is universally reviled and hated, which is why Scientology uses the word, right? Then you have religion, right? Scientology is desperate to hold on to their religious status. They must continually remind people and place in their minds the idea that Scientology is a religion. Now, I don't happen to think that Scientology is a religion. I happen to think it's a money-making scam. And I have a pretty educated background on which to make that judgment. So I don't particularly like to refer to it as a religion. When I do, I'm doing so because that's what, you know, they call it, and that's how people understand it. And I think the term is debatable, right? But Scientology definitely is telling Tom Cruise, Kirstie Alley, all their celebrities to repeatedly use that term when referring to Scientology so that it will, you know, echo in people's minds that Scientology equals religion equals attacking Scientology equals attacking a religion, right? And people generally react negatively to people who attack religions. Freedom of religion is very important in the United States, always has been, and Scientology plays on that. And also, there's an idea that that religion is, of course, sacred, right? So, you know, there's something about a group that calls themselves a religion that automatically you get in a lot of people's minds, especially in the United States, very conservative, very religious country, you automatically get an association of goodness or wholesomeness or contributing to the community or doing good works. You know, if it's a religion, it must be blank, right? Fill in the blank, right? Must be good, must be holy, must be, you know, faithful, must be, you know, one of these things that people assume. They make vast assumptions about groups based on labels, and religion is a big one. So if you can get yourself, you can get a group together and you can get it called a religion, man, you know, you're gonna get a lot of mileage out of that term, right? And bigot, of course, is one of the points of mileage that you get, because then if somebody's attacking your group, they're a bigot. They're anti-religion. They're anti-First Amendment. There's so many things that you can then label that person and call that person and criticize the critic, you know, using these words. And that gets a lot of public opinion, unthinking public opinion, uneducated public opinion, on the side of Scientology, because people don't know, don't care to know, don't want to find out, you know, about it, because it takes a little while to find out all about how bad Scientology really is. And so they just automatically assume that, oh, well, maybe there's something good to Scientology. Now, I think at this point, fortunately, there's been so much bad press, so much exposure of Scientology over the last few years, that it's pretty nailed at this point that people really do get, in general, that Scientology is not actually a religion. It's not actually valuable and doesn't actually do anything for anybody, that it is all about money. And I think that's pretty well known at this point, which is why the Scientology is so desperate to keep putting those buzzwords out there and trying to change that idea, right? But they're doing a really bad job at it. They're going to continue to do a really bad job at it, because there isn't anybody in the world of Scientology who really knows what they're doing when it comes to creating and molding public opinion. I mean, look at what they do. Look at the press they put out. Look at the commercials they put out. Are these the products of people who understand how to communicate to the masses? They're not. And so the good news, for me at least, about this is that I feel safe and secure in the knowledge that they're going to continue to not really successfully change public opinion about them. The Scientology is not going to be able to change how people think about them, because they don't know how. So what you're seeing with these buzzwords is their best attempt, and it's not a very good one. There you go. Michael Blau. Chris, do you see that you are embarking on the daunting task of reversing the predominant trend of human culture? I don't believe it is hyperbole to say that your definition and promotion of rational thinking and behavior could represent a new and distinct direction in human cognitive evolution. Your work arguably occupies a space equivalent to that of religion and the group instinct that you mentioned in the latest blog. I've often thought that mankind, early on, headed off into some directions in response to the pressures of survival. Somehow those directions constituted definition of codes of conduct, moralities, that provided comfort and guidelines to help deal with the difficulties of life. With some time and effort, those early survival solutions became religions. Some opportunists saw the power of such a process and formalized their belief systems into the control mechanisms that became organized religion. It didn't have to happen that way, but it did. This defined the character of subsequent human cultures. You are demonstrating an alternative. Reason, rational thinking, and understanding of what is a belief system would have served mankind much better and saved millennia of abuses. Better late than never, I guess. While you are not the first rational thinker to voice your sentiments, your publication and promotion of these principles may well lie at ground zero of a revolution that sets our culture in a new direction. Your comments. Okay, well, first off, wow, and thank you very much for saying all of that about what I'm trying to do. I really appreciate it, actually, because I don't really view myself in quite that awe-inspiring of a role. But I would certainly like to get there. And if I can get my channel and my words and thoughts and you know, the videos and whatnot that I'm producing, if I can move things in a direction where the world becomes a bit more reasonable and rational as a result of what I'm doing, wow, mission accomplished, you know. I'm not, I agree somewhat with what you said about religion, where religion comes from. I think it's a big question, it's a big topic. There's no single source of religion. There's a multitude of reasons why we have it. And I don't think that it's an outmoded concept, particularly in modern times, but I think it's moving in that direction as we learn more about the physical universe and ourselves and our relationship with the universe and all of that. But we got a long way to go before we're going to be past our primitive urges and needs for, you know, an almost instinctive need for spiritual beliefs, right? Because the vast majority of people do have that. You can rail against it and not agree with it and that sort of thing, but it's kind of there, you know, and we got a lot of work to do before we're going to be rational creatures enough to overcome that, those urges that we have, because they're strong, you know. And a lot of, you know, and some people need that for their morality and for rules and guidelines for their life and that sort of thing. You know, but I would very much like to do whatever I can to get to popularize reason and rational thought and critical thinking. I think this is a point that we're gonna either we're either gonna survive or we're gonna die on this. We're either gonna evolve past these primitive destructive impulses and violent impulses that we have as a species, or we're not. It's a real binary sort of thing. It's we're either going to do it, and we're gonna get past this very violent type of civilization that we have, and move past that, and really get to a place where we can live and work together with tolerance and understanding for each other. And we're either going to get there, or we're going to kill each other. And then we're going to go the path of the dinosaurs. We're just going to be another blot on the Earth's memory. And then something else will evolve, and they'll go for it. You know, nature will go for it again. And that's about how much importance we have right now. We have a potential as a species of near infinite expansion and capability into this whole universe, I think. This is why I love Star Trek. This is why I love the ideas of science fiction writers and great thinkers and humanitarians, is because they tell us and show us what our potential is. And it's big, it's huge, you know. But the news and the media show us the reality of, are we meeting those potentials or not? You know, not all news, of course, you know, but I mean, you get the contrast I'm making. And I really hope that we can overcome our violent urges and our violent tendencies, you know. It's almost instinctive with us that if somebody disagrees with us, we want to hit them, we want to hurt them, we want to beat them into submission. And we've got to get past that, you know. We really do. Because if we don't, we're not going to make it, you know. And all the other, you know, all that talk about potentials and whatnot will be just so much wasted hot air, and we'll be gone. So I think critical thinking and reason and learning about skepticism and learning how to have a skeptical attitude about things, I think those all help move us in that direction of tolerance and compassion and understanding and respect. You know, those are really important words, and they represent attitudes and ideas that we all need to have. So everything I'm doing is trying to move that ball down the road, and I hope that I can continue to do this and make a difference out there to as many people as I can possibly reach. That's in the end, everything that I'm doing is in that direction. And all the Scientology stuff that I talk about is really just a beginning to getting on a much broader road that I want to be on, and so I hope that I'm moving in that direction. Steve O'Donnell, how did the release of the film Battlefield Earth play in the church when you were in? Did you know about it, and were you encouraged to see it? Also, when it bombed critically and commercially, how did the church spin the production's failure? Okay, so when Battlefield Earth came out, every Sea Org member, every person who was in the Sea Organization in Los Angeles was given money to and time off all weekend long during opening weekend to go see that movie over and over and over again. And I mean all of us. I saw Battlefield Earth that weekend five or six times. In the theater, right? We were trying to obviously push the sales. We were trying to make it a hit movie. Failed utterly to do so, obviously. It bombed, and it bombed hard. In fact, I think mostly the people who ended up seeing it and spending money on it were us, because it certainly wasn't the rest of the Payne movie public. Man, that movie was awful. Oh, and I hated it. When I was in, I hated it when I went and saw it. And I was reluctant to overtly say how bad it was. I just sort of, you know, we all just kind of looked at each other and sort of, oof, you know. And I, you know, I being a more honest, you know, chap, I actually went and saw Battlefield Earth that many times. I didn't skip out and buy a ticket to it and then go see another movie. I really wish I had. But I kept actually being in fear that I would get caught, you know, doing something like that. So I didn't do it. But we didn't have to pay for it. The church gave us the money, and it was, you know, I saw Sea Org members from every part of Scientology there at in Burbank and Hollywood that weekend watching it. Now, after the movie bombed, which it definitely deserved, you know, there was a lot of, okay, well, before the movie came out, we had all kinds of buildup to it. You know, this was John Travolta's baby. It was going to be amazing. It was going to be incredible. And it was going to be this major Hollywood production. There was going to be all this money in it and special effects and oh my God. And it was going to be in two parts, you know. The first movie was just going to be the first part. Then there was going to be, you know, a sequel. And we thought this was going to be the bomb diggity, right? So then after it bombed, after it really crashed hard and nobody liked it, you know, I was personally upset because they had made such changes to the source materials, you know, and we were told that it was going to be exactly as Hubbard wrote it. They just took the book, and made it the screenplay, right? Well, yeah, no, they didn't. And it actually has potential as a story, I think. You know, it's not a great book. I used to think it was a really great book. And on reflection, I really don't think it's a great book. But I think that it's a better book than what that movie was. And it has potential. And you could modify it and change it to make it even better. They seemed, for whatever reason, the director and the screenwriters changed it to make it 20 times worse. I mean, it was awful. So apparently what I'm told is that David Miscavige was seeing the dailies and was seeing, you know, as the movie was being made, he was all over, you know, watching and controlling what was happening with the movie to whatever degree he could. And he thought it was great. He thought it was going to be wonderful. He was like, oh my God, this is going to be the best thing ever. And then after it came out and bombed, it was like, oh, that, you know, that director was such an SP, was such a suppressive person, right? And those guys just ruined Hubbard's work. And he was really pissed at John Travolta. You know, maybe rightfully so, because John Travolta was a producer on that thing, if I remember right. And it was just a travesty. I think it's gotten, you know, like every, you know, Golden Raspberry Award you can get. You know, the director is kind of, at this point now, he's sort of proud of how bad it was. You know, he just laughs about it. But I think Miscavige pretty much scapegoated the director and Travolta and kind of threw them under the bus. And he's, I don't think he's ever really liked John Travolta ever since then. So that's, and we didn't talk about it. You know, in terms of church spin, there was none. It just got brushed under the rug and nobody talked about it ever again. And that's kind of Battlefield Earth. Kiva Go. Hi, Chris. Can you please give a narrative of the most common nightmares you had immediately after leaving and since? And if anything you dreamt has helped or hindered your recovery? You know, I have had a number of bad dreams, nightmares. They were really bad right after I got out of Scientology, when I first found out what it was all about and stuff, and then decided to leave, and then was going through a real rough patch. Then, of course, after, you know, I lost and everybody got declared suppressive and was disconnected from, that was also a rough patch. And during those times, and progressively less as the years have gone on, but still sometimes they crop up, the dreams are almost always, for me, very, very similar, which is I dream about being back in the Sea Org or back in on the Sea Org base in Los Angeles and desperately wanting to leave and being trapped again in that situation of wanting to get out or escape or just take off and plotting and planning and trying to figure out how to do it. And that's pretty much what the dream is about, is just leaving, getting away, getting out. You know, I'm aware of the fact that in the dream, I'm aware of the fact that it's a bad thing, that I don't want to be there. I'm not back under the mind control of thinking it's a good thing. I know it's bad. I never slip back into earlier, you know, thought patterns. But figuring out how to escape, you know, it's always an escape sort of thing. So those have been my dreams. And waking up from them, you know, at first, when I was first having those kind of dreams, it was rough. I didn't enjoy it. I didn't like it. Being, you know, having the Sea Org security chasing me around or controlling me and my actions was, it sucks. As the years went on and the dreams became less, you know, and my recovery process and my education and whatnot has sort of moved forward, it became encouraging to me that the dreams were about me leaving, that I was escaping, that I was always getting away from it. You know, that's a good thing, of course, and I never had a dream about wanting to get back in or wanting to compromise with my, you know, with what I know now, or compromise how I feel in order to, you know, get into some, you know, deal with the devil in order to be reconnected with people or something like that. That's never been part of the construct. So I've been encouraged by that. That's, to me personally, that's been a sign that I am past it and am moving away from it, right? And of course, since I dream less and less about it, I am moving more and more away from it. So, so that's kind of how that's gone, and I hope that answers your question. Jason, what would it take to remove Miscavige as the chairman of the board? I am assuming there is a board. If this is the case, considering the board has witnessed the abuses and violence Miscavige has been accused of, why has he not been voted off? If he is the chairman of the board, can't he be removed by a majority vote? Why not a coup? Well, I actually addressed this in my book, Scientology A to Xenu, which you can get and read. But you're making assumptions that everybody who's not familiar with Scientology makes and shouldn't be making, because there is no board. Miscavige has sole dictatorial control of Scientology and always has. The boards of directors, the trustees, the corporations, the whole, you know, setup was all designed to be a labyrinth of confusion to people who look at Scientology and think that it's like everything else in the world, and it's not like everything else in the world. Its setup is very unique. David Miscavige controls Scientology through the Sea Organization, and there is no other group in the world that is quite like the Sea Organization. And so I can't really easily make comparisons to other groups. The people in the Sea Organization are loyal to David Miscavige, first, foremost, always, and forever. He's the one who heads up Scientology. Before David Miscavige, they were loyal to L. Ron Hubbard. So it's really to whoever heads up the whole operation. That's who the Sea Organization is loyal to. And the Sea Organization are the people who hold all of the board posts, our positions. They're the ones who are running all the different executive functions. But if they're all compromised by being responsible to or answerable to David Miscavige because they're Sea Org members, then that immediately removes all of their power and authority for the positions that they hold, right? And because they're Sea Organization members, they can be sent to the RPF, the Rehabilitation Project Force, which is the Sea Org's prison system. They can be sent to that just like that. All David Miscavige has to do is say, RPF, they're gone. That's it. Like right then, that person disappears. And he doesn't reappear for years. So if anybody in the board of directors or any other way, any other group tried to, you know, execute some kind of coup against Miscavige, he would do away with them. If he even suspected that that's what they were up to, he would get them, he'd, you know, make them disappear to the RPF or kick them out of the Sea Org or put them in, you know, some other horrible place so that they wouldn't be able to do that. And that's how David Miscavige has stayed in power for the last three, you know, plus decades. So that's how things really work in Scientology and in the Sea Organization. And all this stuff about boards and corporations and structures and all that stuff, you know, that's all just smoke and mirrors. And that's that. All right, we got some flash answers. Larry Marvin, how many hours per week are staff working? Since you'd have to have a real job to pay the bills, you must not have time for anything. Right. Staff work about 40 hours a week, minimum, right? And we're talking about at the local church level, the class 5 orgs, where you have, very no to low income, and you have to have another job in order to support yourself, right? For those people, and I was one of them for 8 years, you have a full-time job outside of the church, and then you have the church job, which is a full-time job. So, you know, it's 80, 90 hours a week of work. You got the rest of the week to sleep and do whatever else you're going to do for yourself. Nash TV Dan. Tony's blog claimed that Scientology is getting ready to attack you. What was your initial reaction? Well, I can't say that I look forward to something like that or that I want anything like that to happen to me. But I'm ready as I can be for it. And so, you know, if it happens, it happens. I think that the body of work that I've produced since I left Scientology speaks for itself. I think it's pretty clear what my intentions are and who I am. I've been about as open as I know how to be with everybody through the course of my work and my writing. And so you guys know who I am and what I'm about. So anything the church wants to put out there about me or say or denigrate me or whatever, you know, go ahead. But I think I'm pretty real and pretty honest and pretty open. Niv Tom, what do the terms black Dianetics and reverse auditing mean? Basically, those terms were used by Hubbard to describe using Dianetics or Scientology harmfully on purpose. Now, Dianetics and Scientology were put together in such a way that, people believe that they're only to be used to help people. And Hubbard disguised the true nature of auditing because it's hypnotic and that sort of thing. So he said that you could use the procedures in such a way as to cause people harm, and you could do that on purpose. And that was called black Dianetics or reverse auditing. And that's basically what those terms mean. Katie lied. This might be a completely ludicrous question, but I do not know the answer. If the Scientologist's goal is to clear the planet of body thetans, why does it matter whether they are doing it with the official approval of the Church of Scientology or doing it as an independent? Once the BT is talked into leaving the body, isn't that just one less BT that everyone on Earth needs to worry about? I realize that financially, a branch of Scientology makes less money if another branch is removing BTs more cheaply, but in the grand scheme of things, doesn't this decrease the N Theta population for everyone? Why can't they all work together? Well, because the basic assumption of your question is incorrect. Scientology doesn't exist to get rid of all the BTs in the world and make the world a better place. Scientology exists to make money. And when you look at everything that Scientology is doing in those terms, it all makes sense. When you look at Scientology in any other term, like that they're trying to help people, or free the world, or make the world a better place, or bring Scientology to the world at large, or anything else like that, then what they do doesn't make any sense at all. And it wouldn't make any sense because that's not the goal or purpose that Scientology has, and it never has had. And that's really about as simple an answer as I can give you. Okay, well, those were some extended answers and questions for you for this episode. Thank you very much for coming around. I hope you enjoyed those, and I hope that I gave you some value and some education here on some of these points this week. Thank you very much for watching, and I'll see you guys next week.